Snyder displayed his wealth conspicuously, a diamond-studded Rolex watch, a gold chain with Steve encrusted in diamonds, an alligator skin briefcase, expensive tailored suits. His office wall displayed a framed check written to his firm for $70 million. He almost lost a New Jersey trial when jurors mistook his Rolls-Royce in the parking lot for that of his client. He defied conventional thinking about how lawyers should comport themselves. He flashed his wealth inside the courtroom because he believed jurors would lean his way if they believed he was rich and successful. He wept and shouted at witnesses. He ignored judges when they ruled him out of line. Some members of the corporate bar dismissed Snyder as more showman than lawyer, a flashy cynic who manipulates unsophisticated jurors by twisting the facts, the Baltimore Sun put it. Even within his own tort or plaintiff's law community, he remained emphatically and annoyingly in second place in the city of his birth. Peter J. Angelus, another street-smart University of Baltimore Law School graduate, had earned an immense fortune in contingency fee asbestos and tobacco cases, and had used his winnings to purchase the Baltimore Orioles baseball team. Whereas Snyder's greatest verdicts exceeded $100 million, Angelus had gotten rich from billion-dollar tobacco and asbestos cases. Snyder was desperate to catch up, to land his own white whale. Jacksonville Exxon seemed to have that potential, or so Snyder concluded, as he solicited clients soon after news of the leak became public. He had not been tracking MTBE litigation nationwide, but soon educated himself. The attraction of the Jacksonville case had little to do with its complex environmental aspects. Snyder and his colleagues were drawn instead to the fact that the station had put up a misleading sign during the first day or two after the spill, and then ExxonMobil had given talking points to the station manager that she found to be lies. Those were the sorts of facts that could turn a jury's emotions against a giant corporation. Snyder found himself in a race with Angelus once again. His rival's firm signed up as clients, property owners around the Jacksonville station. Lawyers for the two rival firms prowled the same neighborhoods, seeking to recruit as many homeowners affected by the leak as possible. On Robcast Road, Steve Tizard and two of his neighbors decided to interview the firms contending for their business. They met Angelus's team and more than a dozen other firms. When it was Snyder's turn, he arrived with his entire law firm, even as he declared he was not sure he wanted to take the case. It was a show of force, Tizard recalled. I was getting sold every second. He was just so arrogant and nasty. 89 families within the general vicinity of the station, including Tizard's, eventually agreed to go with Snyder. Exxon executives quickly removed the case from the Safety, Health, and Environment Department and handed it over to the Law Department, putting it into the operations queue with the other MTBE cases the corporation faced. By now, ExxonMobil's in-house legal strategists had a playbook for such cases. In accidents like Jacksonville's, the corporation had learned that there was usually no point fighting the basic question of legal responsibility. Instead, the goal of its defense strategy was to avoid punitive damages. In the Exxon Valdez case, Lee Raymond had refused to bend by paying punitive damages, and his stubborn determination eventually made new and favorable law for corporations at the United States Supreme Court. The court held that formulas under which actual damages found at trial might be multiplied to determine punitive damages could be constitutional, as long as the multiplier was relatively low, such as 1 or 2 times the actual damages. "The strategic call we made," Lee Raymond recalled, "was that the punitive damage issue is moving our way, so we are just going to hang in there. That was the strategy for 20 years, and we just called it right and had good lawyers." ExxonMobil was hardly going to depart from these principles while defending itself in local trials over spilled gasoline. As to actual or compensatory damages, payments to homeowners for the actual losses they incurred because of the Jacksonville Exxon's leaking gasoline, Exxon's representatives told residents that in principle, the corporation was willing to pay for lost property values and proven medical claims, including documented emotional distress. With Steven Snyder's clients, however, settlement negotiations failed. Snyder's firm felt ExxonMobil's lawyers were trying to skim off the clients in his group with the strongest cases and settle with those, while leaving Snyder with the weaker cases at trial. He urged his clients to hang together, and they did. Because the case involved MTBE claims, it was initially assigned to the federal court system to be consolidated with all of the other MTBE cases accumulating around the country. Snyder wanted to try the case before a state jury on his home court, where he knew the rhythms and rules best. State court juries tended to award punitive damages more readily than federal juries. It took some maneuvering, but Snyder eventually won a decision removing the case to the Maryland courts in exchange for his agreement to drop claims specifically related to the health effects of MTBE. ExxonMobil honed its defense strategy as the trial day approached. Gasoline prices in the United States were rising, and oil companies were more unpopular than ever. The corporation could expect hostility from at least some jurors. Therefore, it would try to win sympathy from the jury by forthrightly admitting that it was at fault. It would apologize to the plaintiffs and the jurors, and it would invite the jury to determine what actual damages local homeowners deserved. At the same time, ExxonMobil's lawyers would defend adamantly against the claim that it owed punitive damages. Before the Jacksonville trial opened, ExxonMobil paid $4 million to the Maryland Department of the Environment and accepted responsibility for the spill. The corporation spent, according to its representatives, another $38 million on cleanup efforts in the neighborhood around Jacksonville Exxon. It dug into the groundwater, installed test wells to monitor for the presence of benzene or MTBE, and used chemical and other treatments to clean and eliminate gasoline residues from the aquifer.